Good morning. Today is Monday, chili cook-off day in Fortuna. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Michael Davies Hughes. What?
Oh, chili cook-off already?
Yeah.
Did that happen last year or the year before?
Last year it did. The year before, no.
So okay.
I could be like an elected official and say yes and no.
Do you like chili?
Some. Too many people try to make it an opportunity to throw in ghost peppers, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
I'm not into heat. I like subtleties.
Oh.
So salsa for me is always the mild one.
Really?
Yeah, because then you can taste the flavors instead of just smoke your taste buds.
Oh, I'd like a little hot. Hot sauce, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll use like Tabasco, but I don't open the lid up and just dump it on.
I think it's because growing up in the UK, our main ethnic food was Indian food. Spiced curry.
So a lot of curries.
Mm-hmm. Really enjoyed it.
Ah. So you're kind of protected.
I think my...
Yeah, I can taste the differences of crab just with the crab.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but those are subtleties.
I have an aversion to shellfish, I get.
You don't like crab?
No. Well, get sick or lobster or...
Oh, really?
Yeah, any shellfish just doesn't sit well.
Huh. But you can handle curries.
You betcha.
All right. Our why do we say that this morning? Hand to mouth. Why do we say hand to mouth?
Hand to mouth.
Not that chili is something you eat with your hand, but some curries can be that way.
They can, yeah. Usually eating them with utensils, but I mean, you could get in there with your hands for sure. I think it would leave some kind of like garlic, you know. It would permeate.
Might eat the ends of your fingertips if it's the hot stuff.
But we digress.
Hand
to mouth.
Someone's avoiding. Yes.
Hand to mouth. Well, it's a direct line, isn't it, from the hand to the mouth. It's uninhibited. It's something that, gosh, I'm really reaching here, Brian. Just throw me a lifeline.
All right. It starts in 1586.
Well, that's not helpful.
No.
I wasn't around then.
Great Britain experienced a failure of grain crops. Thousands starved during a time of famine, and multitudes who survived became thinner from hunger. Food was often so scarce that when a person managed to get a bit, he behaved like Kurdish refugees in the 20th century Iraq. As soon as a person had a piece of bread in his hand, he would thrust it into his mouth to make sure no one would snatch it away.
Yeah.
Hand-to-mouth existence was a fact of life until modern times. So many people practiced it that we still use the phrase to label substandard living conditions.
Mm. Yeah, living hand-to-mouth.
Yeah. So, no, you weren't anywhere close.
No, I wasn't.
No.
And that's okay. It keeps me humble in Humboldt.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, throw the tea on
that. Not that I need any help with that. I have teenage kids and, you know, they keep me humble.
Employees, family members.
You name it.
General strangers. Oh, boy. Summertime. So you guys have got your new budget. And
yes.
Has the state signed off yet?
Yeah, the governor signed off and...
All done. And then he went to Montana? Is that kind of how it went?
Is that what he did?
Yeah. One of those states...
summer recess.
One of those states we're not supposed to go to.
Why is that?
Because of the vaccine.
Oh.
And their status as a state.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Consistency.
Hmm. Maybe he went fishing.
Possibly. I think the only argument would be that he got lost. But I don't think that's the case.
Hmm.
Anyway, so you got a budget.
I have a budget. It looks really good for education. I mean, in my experience, this is probably the best.
So what are you going to do with all the extra money?
I would say it's extra money. Now,
Additional money?
Money that is required.
One-time money?
To make sure that we provide. It's not even one-time money.
Oh,
this is
how can you guarantee that?
Well, yeah, I guess I've got to be careful about that. It is these are ongoing funds as opposed to the money that we got from COVID, for example, which were, you know, one time. We knew they were one time in nature. So this is a commitment of base revenue through Prop 98. So it is, I mean, like, obviously things can change. We know that the state
IOUs
budget.
IOUs are in the past.
But right now we're going to certainly make the most of it. So I wouldn't say that it's extra money. I'd say that it's money that we have been asking for, a commitment to education for years, right? Because if you think about where California ranks among all the states in terms of per pupil spending, historically we've been down in the, you know, 40,
you really
45, 50.
How this do we define students?
Yeah, I think we've had this conversation
yes,
before,
we
perhaps,
have.
Haven't we?
It normally settles around top 10.
Yeah. Coming back to what are we going to do with the money that we've received?
Okay.
We know that we have kids, and I've mentioned this before, a large percentage of our students are non-readers, right, or have poor reading skills.
So
same thing with mathematics.
You would think that with some of the current technology that's available is that reading would be more and more required rather than less and less. I mean, even playing some of the video games, there's a language component to that.
Yeah.
Just isn't translated?
Not so much. I mean, the science of reading has shown us that, I mean, explicit reading instruction in the early on is really important for students.
Dr. Seuss books rather than Sesame Street.
Yeah, Dr. Seuss Plus. I mean, even
Plus?
You know, kind of deeper than that. Oh. Yeah, you can't just have Dr.
Seuss.
Well, I
would say like four and 5 year olds.
Yes.
You know, the pre ones, you kind of get the ball rolling.
And not just being read to, but actually teaching them how to read. Really important. So we're definitely going to continue to emphasize that. Math literacy, really important. We're seeing that students are not in, you know, where they need to be in math. And we see that the effects of that when they get into college, students needing to take remedial math courses.
I thought you were going to say when they get in elected office.
Well, I could always do with some help with my math skills myself.
KIS is an information time. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Michael Davis Hughes from Humboldt County Office of Ed. So you got these dollars.
Yes.
Whether it's pennies from heaven or, pardon me, dollars from heaven or from anywhere else. How do you allocate it so you don't blow it all in one shot? Because I would think that there's labor groups nibbling on your ankles. Okay. Deferred maintenance issues.
Yeah,
nibbling on your ankles. You've got all these computers that you're buying for the kids now so they can do the off-site learning. Well, those become antiquated rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The infrastructure associated with that.
Yeah.
How do you figure out what plan you're going to do, what plan you're going to recommend if the various school districts ask you for feedback?
Right. One of the approaches that I have is kind of that zero-based budget. So, you know, what are the things that are most important? Let's fund those first. And I, you know, I was a school administrator in that 2007, 2008 era when we had significant cuts. And I was a site principal at the time. And our site budget was just hacked. And so when you make cuts, you start to think about what are the most important things that we have to keep and build your budget from there. When times are good, and certainly times are better right now, same approach. What are the things that are most important?
But there's a tendency for laziness. Roll it over.
Yeah.
Keep what we got. If we got an extra 5%, okay, and then we'll just look for a couple of projects.
Yeah. For me, it comes down to what is in the best interest of kids. I have a sense of, there's a sense of urgency, and I draw parallels with like the medical field. If I was to walk into an ICU, a critical care ward, and, you know, patients were, had some prior, you know, real medical needs, I can't just sit back. You know, I've got to get in there and intervene and provide them the service that they need. So
stop
that they
the bleeding.
Absolutely. Yeah.
See what the cause is, and you
yes,
work
and
down
build
your,
and build yeah. from there. And the same thing, I think, you know, with students, we have. I've talked about the students that are struggling with their reading, struggling with the math. We have students that are really struggling with their mental health issues. Right. We've got students that need social emotional support. How do we?
Now, does that change because of the 2-year separation,
yeah.
or was that always there and maybe just not moved high up on
yeah.
the ladder?
Yeah, I think it's been exacerbated for sure because of the pandemic. So those who were struggling before with social emotional needs, mental health issues, it just, you know, COVID made it worse.
How prevalent is that? I asked that kind of halfway just out of ignorance, but I know that there's a sub-bureaucracy established around kids that aren't performing to their highest level. And we find out what it is, and we kind of work with them. And, you know, I can remember the most common comment I had on my elementary school report cards. Achieving at or below apparent ability consistently. That's
yeah.
called boredom. Okay, well, you guys can't jump in and, you know, make life exciting all the time. It's
no.
kind of like T-ball and nobody loses. Yeah, you know, it's not life. So how do you get that balance
yeah.
of what is normal frustrations and challenges versus right. the panacea that some want for their kids 100% of the time?
Yeah, for sure. I think it comes from needing to have relationship-based schools. You know, kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I know that's cliche, but that's the reality as well, is that connecting with kids, understanding where they're coming from, the challenges that they are having, having those strong relationships with students across the board, keeping an eye on kids, not just in the classroom, how they're interacting on the playground, what the supports they need beyond the regular school day. That means connecting with families and parents. Those are the responsibilities that we have to make sure that students are ready to learn. And we've got students that are struggling with that and have struggled with that for a long time. And we're seeing the effects of that now because of the COVID pandemic has just made that situation worse for those students.
So accelerating what already was or compounding what has kind of developed?
Yeah, compounding, because, you know, families that have struggled with the pandemic, you know, students being at home, added pressures to the family because work conditions, whatever it might be, those things have an effect on kids and their kids and the students' readiness to learn in the classroom. So what can we provide in terms of support for students and for teachers? And for staff who, because, you know, when you go to college and you do your teaching credential, you take these classes to prepare yourself for being in the classroom. Being a school social worker is not on the job.
It's
not in the job description, but it is the reality of what teachers are having to do in the classroom.
I would have thought that there was a lot of psychology. It's sales, right? So there would be psychology requirements, some social service requirements, so that they come in and they understand not just the material that they're presenting, but how best to present it, how to reach the customer, so
right.
to speak.
That's
not part of, until they get dropped in as a student teacher, that's not part of what their reality is?
Not to the extent that makes them enables them to be prepared for the realities in the classroom.
That's got to fall under the heading of rude awakening.
Yeah.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Times, 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Michael Davies Hughes from the Office of Education.
Education.
Hey, how's the fence business doing?
The fence business?
The fence business. Huh. Looks like it's kind of falling apart.
Oh, the one at the county office?
Yeah.
Or around the county office?
Yeah. Well, not the property adjacent to.
Yeah.
You're not having to keep the employees behind the fence, are you?
No.
Okay, good, good. Yeah.
No, our employees love coming to work.
Every single day.
Every single day. So, yeah, that's a real challenge, you know, because that fence has been rebuilt before. And we actually don't own...
Poster bent.
Now, no, how do they do that?
I figure a car ran into it.
I mean, no, I don't think a car ran into it. I think somebody with superhuman strength. I just don't know how...
Is that going to be worked with a little bit because of the senior housing across the street?
Don't know about that.
Community safety thing?
What I do know is that property adjacent to the Humboldt County Office of Ed is not owned entirely by us. There are three property owners in that. And the section that is the worst doesn't even belong to us. So
why are you responsible for the fence?
Well, we're not wholly responsible for the fence, but you know, we do want to get it fixed again. I think we're gonna have to look at a smaller gauge of wire so that they can't get wire cutters in there.
Takes more effort to get through it.
Yeah. So, and of course it's in a watershed or an area that's protected,
creek,
so
swamp.
We can't really go in there and clear cut all that brush and the trees
that's
in there.
The way it was. You've seen some of the old pictures when it was the orchard.
Yeah.
There was no other trees in there.
Yeah, I know. It's
yeah.
It's a real challenge. It bugs me.
Yeah, so smaller gauge is the next step to see if that can take care of it.
Yeah.
How much money are you having to spend each year on that thing?
Well, certainly our maintenance crew goes down there, helps to clear
out.
Not labor.
Just hard, incremental cost.
Yeah. We're putting up a new fence right now around the community school.
I suppose that has to be protected too.
Well, it does get a lot of through traffic, pedestrian traffic that comes through there. So
Pedestrian traffic. Come on. You mean there's a trail?
Well... Individuals who are not enrolled in that school sometimes come through.
Going to the fast food places?
So that fence, and it's not a very long fence. I think that we're looking at like $40,000 for putting a fence around all the way around. So fencing is really, really expensive.
And a repeating cost.
Yes, a repeating cost.
With some of these other national news stories that we hear around schools,
yes,
are you recommending, requiring, are you going to cover the cost for all of these schools to have, I guess, campus security? I mean, the fence would, I guess, fall under security. Is that going to be what we're going to see in the next couple of years, even for the rurals that are you would like to think that they would be immune, but it's proving that nobody is. Is that something you're really going to get bullish about?
No. It is, I mean, it's up to each individual school district how they want to handle that.
Sure, but you're still the advisor, counselor for everybody.
For sure, and you know, we take that role really seriously. We know that each school has a school safety plan, an emergency response. There are ways in which schools can bolster their kind of internal safety. If you think about even schools that have an open campus, and I'm thinking, you know, Eureka High School, for example, they don't have a fence around their campus. However, there are ways in which you can improve school safety, you know, knowing who's on campus, limiting the ingress and egress that individuals have the opportunity to, you know, kind of come and go. You see somebody that's on campus that you don't recognize. I mean, how do you deal with that? Well, we've talked about name badges.
Let's say they have a hard hat on and a safety vest.
Yeah.
Boots and jeans. Okay, it kind of looks like they know what they're doing if they're walking. Mm. Nobody's going to stop them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I don't think I'm giving anybody any ideas that are wildly creative.
No, but
one.
I will say that if somebody's doing construction, that they're usually, you know, those things are fenced off. So having an individual with a hard hat and
give them a clipboard.
Yeah.
And maybe a stopwatch hanging from I mean, something that looks like they're doing some preliminary stuff.
Sure. But I still think the question needs to be asked. And, you know, staff that see somebody that's not familiar, you ask them, what are you doing?
I'm sure
what are you doing here?
That's the plan, the protocol, and all that stuff. But does it get executed or not? And if somebody is a squirrel or worse, okay, are they able to react safely?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is the preparation part of it as well. So, you know, how do you prepare in a situation where you have, heaven forbid, some kind of, you know, assailant on campus?
I would suspect that probably the most common one, and I don't know how common it is the disenfranchised parent. You know, somebody that's now there may be a little logic in there, but it's mostly emotional. And they're looking for something that, you know, was taken from them, so to speak.
Yeah, and it can get pretty scary for staff. I recall when I was a principal, there was a custody dispute, essentially.
Sure, yeah, family court stuff.
And the father came onto campus wanting to take the child. However, the court papers showing that the mother had sole physical custody. And father came in and, you know, he was very confrontational and was insisting that he was going to go and pick up that child. And, you know, I did all that I could to prevent the father from doing that. And, you know, he was ready to knock my lights out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that gets pretty, it can get pretty hairy that way.
So in that kind of a scenario, let's say it's not you, but it's Mrs. You.
Yeah.
Okay, and very little fear of physical, not being able to overtake somebody physically.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do?
Protect the child.
Are there alarms?
You lock the door. You hit a lockdown. You hit a lockdown alarm. Everybody locks those doors, you know. So,
it's not a mechanical, it just happens.
No, it's actually a physical act. Teachers have to go to the doors, lock those doors. Pull down the shades.
Is it a deadbolt throw kind of thing typically, or do they have to find the key?
It depends on the campus.
Sure.
But usually it's a matter of, you know, either turning a key or turning a lock. Yeah.
Does that get drilled?
It does.
So it's like earthquake or any other
lockdown drills or one of the regular drills that schools do.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:44.
Hi folks, Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Michael Davies Hughes. So what do you do in these situations where you've got the national news saying things, or I guess even worse than national news, some of the internet sites, you know, pontificating and playing and whipping things up? You know, if kids are looking at these sites, and a lot of them formerly were neutral fact presenters.
Yeah.
And now they're, you know, working the agendas and stuff. You know, a 7, 8, 10-year-old, 12-year-old isn't going to really know how to vet. I mean, particularly if mom and dad don't.
Yeah. We can help in that regard as far as being...
In the classroom?
Absolutely in the classroom. So I'm thinking about things like Common Sense Media, which provides some guidelines on how to deconstruct or analyze what you're exposed to in terms of the media, social media, so that students know how to navigate that, because it can be really scary. It can be really scary. And so how do you reassure students and give them the tools necessary so that they can make good decisions when they're, you know, exposed to all these different messages that are coming out?
Well, and you have multiple layers, too. You've got, quote-unquote, the internet. But then you've got the social media. I think we all know which one is probably more influential on those under 20.
Yeah.
Totally unfettered, totally unfiltered, mm-hmm. totally unedited. You know, it's, and I think it's tough for some of us because we don't jump in those pools. You know, you want to reduce your anxiety? Don't do it. Okay.
Yeah. I think we can't shut kids down either, as far as if we see as adults, if we see students, you know, being exposed to things in social media and we witness that, there's a risk in just absolutely shutting it down. Okay, you're not going to have access to that anymore, you know, TikTok or whatever it is.
That's got to be an individual's decision.
It has.
Not a system decision.
We've got to play it through. We've got to say, all right, you know, if these are things that you're going to be faced with, here's where this might end, or here are the challenges that you're going to face, and let me help you through that, as opposed to just like shutting it down. Because you know what? Kids are like raccoons. They're very opportunistic. They're going to find ways of circumventing the work of mom and dad, or, you know, a positive adult.
Raccoons.
Yeah, you know. I have a chicken coop.
Oh, okay.
I have a chicken coop.
I figured there was a personal experience thing going on here.
You know, I hear a commotion in the chicken coop, and I take my flashlight, and it's late at night, and I go in there, and a raccoon, and then they see you. You shine a light on them, they look up at you, they go, oops.
Yeah.
I got caught. Well, there was a little hole in the fence here. I just was coming to check it out.
Hole in the fence, full circle.
Oh, my goodness. So
how do you get rid of a raccoon?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we don't want to talk about.
Okay, no parallels on that one.
No.
Okay.
No. Swiftly. We get rid of them swiftly.
There you go. Okay, we act swiftly. And,
yes. And, you take out the intruder.
Now you're talking my language.
Mm.
So you work with the kids
as
best as you can, knowing that 10% sticks. You have to
More than that. Well, you've got to keep going. Like, it's not a one-off.
Over and over again.
And listen to kids. You know, listen to kids.
That means you
kids.
Have to talk. And how many teachers talk with versus talk to?
I think that's changing. I think there are more and more, because it's a necessity. It's a necessity. So
it's a different style of teaching, too.
It's an effective style of teaching.
Oh, yeah.
And it's what kids need.
Yeah. The questions at the end of the chapter isn't necessarily the best approach anymore.
Again, relationship-based schools. How do you build a relationship with a child? It's not by talking at them.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. Thanks for coming by.
Hey, pleasure.
See everybody tomorrow.